What time do you have?
2:20.
2:24.
Okay. We want to talk. Want to talk some about the support ministries, and I don't know really. I'll just enter into them and then let you pick up and ask the questions you want to. We'll get into some of the other areas. We talked about some of them there, and there'll be others that we'll be covering in other sessions. But there comes a time in your ministry that not because of age, but because of growth. And I think this is a wrong concept for a pastor to say that I am getting so old, I can't relate to the youth. Then what you're saying is, if young people come in your service, you can't reach them for God. That's bad. Age has nothing to do with it. It's a matter that I can't handle it all. And God has given us a youth pastor, and the person of Doug Loewenberg, his assistant, Johnny Foster, and now then a volunteer assistant that has a group of young people that's gone this weekend, Craig, I believe it is. He has a group of high school students that are on retreat right now. Plus, Doug has built around him a group of solid, dedicated young men and women that work with him in this ministry. And the Bible rap sessions and other areas of ministry, they're involved in AIM trips. They went to Mexico this year and saw many, many people saved. They went overseas last year, visited some of the countries in Europe last year, and they involved in choir tours, retreats. Doug keeps a very, very active program with the youth. And he confers with us when he feels that he needs to get through with me. He works closer, I guess you would say, with Carl Miller, as far as most of the thing is just a matter of being sure I'm moving in the right direction in this area, that area, because we have confidence in him and what he is doing in the ministry. They have a service every Wednesday night, which helped us out here in the auditorium. Wednesday night, when I am preaching in the auditorium here, we will have a full house, and we will see the greatest number of souls that are saved in our church are saved Monday night and Wednesday night. These are the two greatest nights for people to be saved, in numbers I'm talking about. Doug has a strong program going with the youth. Then we have the Royal Rangers and Missionettes that meet that night. We also have the Spanish Church and the Deaf Church. And there are times that they're involved in their own Bible studies that are meeting elsewhere as well. But the support ministries that we have, the counseling. Counseling is another area. Brethren, you need to start now training people to work with you in counseling. And if you cannot afford to bring in a pastor or bring in someone like Dr. Dobbins or someone who like Dr. Brock or some of these people to teach just in your church, then two or three of you in the area get together and bring these people in. Let them work with you. Begin to shift that counseling responsibility to someone else as much as possible. Now, there's no need for you to say, well, a pastor said to me recently, I just don't counsel. Well, then you aren't pastoring. See, if you're not counseling and nobody else is counseling, then you really aren't pastoring. See, our whole society today is geared to the thought of needing somebody to counsel with you. See, that starts out in school. Now, when I was in school, we didn't have a counselor. Our teacher counseled, paddled, taught, and the whole bit. And most of you were the same way. But now then, every school, if you don't have a counselor, man, well, you can't be certified if you don't have a counselor. That's the first thing. We couldn't be certified here as a school without a counselor. You've got to have a qualified counselor on staff. Everybody's got problems. And so counseling is a big part of it. But that can sap you of your time. It can keep you from study. It can keep you from the Word. And many men do not possess the capability of leaving the counseling in the counseling office. They bring it to the pulpit. And what the people get is what you have counseled that week. And that's not healthy. It's not good for your body. So shift that as much as you can and as soon as you can to free your hands. Are there areas about these areas that you saw here that you'd like to ask questions? But God, I'd like to zero in on some areas that you would like to discuss. Anyone?
Around William Summers from Denton, Texas. I asked this question a while ago, but I evidently didn't answer it the way I should have. I have a church I went to 3.5 years ago that was running 30, and that was pretty well their tops. I've since built a new church. The church is now running 150. Their finances are fine. The growth is fine. But I can't get them to pray. Now, how do you get them to get into intercessory prayer? I confronted my board with it, and they said, they didn't believe you had to pray an hour. I designate an hour on Saturday morning from 7 to 8. We have an hour of prayer. We start at 7 on Sunday evening. We pray from 6 to 7. They say that it doesn't take them an hour to pray. But I'm trying to teach them intercessory prayer to pray for other people. And when you started out in that with that type of congregation or that size, how did you get them to get into intercessory prayer? I'm talking about from the board now.
Okay, first of all, you've heard me say what I did with the board. Now let's back up and see some things. Begin to preach some sermons. Don't preach a series of sermons on this. Just preach a sermon. You might preach another one on fasting and prayer. Okay? And then start asking occasionally. Has there anyone that you have had a definite prayer answered? And that person, whoever stands up, let them testify. Okay? Leave it be. Three or four stand up, let them testify. God will eventually create it. People have to be called to prayer. You can organize a prayer group, but it'll die whenever you leave. There are people that will come out of respect to you, but people have to be called to prayer. There's a little lady that heads up our intercessory prayer group, Grace Knoll. Grace came to our church, a lady that God had performed a miracle in her body physically, and she was faced with open heart surgery again to have to go through with, and God touched her. And Grace came to me one day and she says to me, "Pastor, I don't understand what's happening to me, but I've been writing down some things, and I'd like for you to explain this to me if you can, or it may not make sense to you." She opened up a notebook, and when she opened the notebook up, she handed it to me. And when I started reading, you would have thought this girl had been inside my office listening to me pray. I said, "Where'd you get that, Grace?" She says, "Well, my husband has been working at night. And when he leaves at 11 o'clock at night, I go into the empty bedroom and I start praying. And said a lot of times when he comes back the next morning, I'm still there praying." That means that she's been on her knees for between 9 and 10 hours. And she said, "God tells me this stuff and I write it down." This lady was agreeing with me. For instance, she says, "I don't understand this one." She says, "The Lord told me last week to pray for you that you needed $90,000. Do we need $90,000? I haven't told anybody that we need $90,000. But that was to the penny of what we not only needed, we had to have. And I could tell you case after case after case after case. where she'd walk up to me and hand me a note. And what she had in that note was the exact thing that I had been praying about. So one day she came to me and she says, Pastor, I don't know how to phrase this. I don't know how to say this. I said, you don't have to. I said, God has told you to move from your home to the church to start praying. She said, yeah. I said, he has. I said, your room is on the third floor at the far end of the hall. I've already designated that room. I've talked to them about it. And that's exactly what she was going to ask me. She had not discussed it with anyone, but God had showed me 2 weeks prior to that to get the room ready that God was going to move her into the building and there would be people. There are people that go there and pray and seek God and wait before God by the hours. We never publicize it. We never announce it. We never encourage people to go there. You're either called to intercessory prayer or you do not do it. Now, an intercessor prayer warrior is a little weird. And I don't mean that unkind. Well, a person that just, you know, that when you spend 6 and 8 and sometimes 10 and 12 hours and 24 hours praying and talking to God, you just really don't act like the normal person does. That's right. And these people who are called intercessory prayer, if they're not ready and willing to take a little buff off of other people, they won't stick. An intercessory prayer person has to be called to it. Now, there are other people that will spend time praying, but a true intercessor is as divinely called as a man who's called to the ministry. But there's no glory in it except the glory that you see of people being saved. It's not like a singer. They get up and sing and they applaud. What Grace is praying about. Now, this happened just 2 weeks ago. I haven't talked with Grace Knowles face to face personally in over 6 months. And she walked to the office. Somebody else was coming in the office. She stuck inside and said, Boss, here's some things, and handed me a slip of paper. On that slip of paper were the exact things that I had been talking to God about. And I haven't talked to Grace Knowles in over 6 months. Personal person, not on phone or nowhere. I just never spend any time with her, hardly. She'll call me up. And Grace went through a tremendous physical battle all last year. Grace and all still spends an average of 6 to 8 hours per day on her knees before God. Now, there are some others who pray with her. Y'all ever see me have them to come to the platform? Never. Average person will never know they're here. They have their room, they go there, and that's it. See, if you start publicizing it, you got a lot of riffraff in there. And that happened at one time, whenever people were talking about prayer and what have you, and we didn't publicize it, but it just happened. I got a bunch of people there, and she came to me, and she says, Pastor, what are we going to do? I said, just leave it alone, it'll take care of itself. Don't try to start sorting it out. It wasn't too long till it all filtered out to where there's 2 or 3 people in there that pray and seek God. And if any church has one intercessor, thank God, that's probably all you'll ever get. You'll have a lot of people that'll pray. But intercessors are as hard to find as hen's teeth. You just don't find them. They're called and they're given to people. And I believe intercessors are given to ministers. And all the study I've ever done, Reese Howell. You ever read Reese Howell's book? It's to a man, intercessor for a man. Who was the man that used to preach that the guy would go and stay on the platform, and while he's preaching on the platform, he'd be praying under the platform? Right, that's right, Charles Finney. And these prayer, these people, you usually just get one to a church. And not really to a church, it's usually to the man. Prayer warriors of that nature are called to the person. Now, I could be wrong on that, but I'm just telling you from what I know and what I've experienced. But your testimonies and your challenge of your people will get your people involved in prayer. It won't happen overnight, because praying is hard work. And it just won't happen overnight. Now, as you began this and you began to preach it, now then I have a staff that prays. Doug, y'all have an all-night prayer meeting. How often? From 7 to 10 on Friday night, I believe. Once a month, and then they'll have about three of these that go all night. They just had an all-night prayer meeting just recently, and you had how many young people stayed all night? Close to 100 young people that stayed all night praying and seeking God. See, and so that's where it begins to generate and begins to build. But why does it start? Doug stays in the Word and spends a lot of time in prayer. See, and he begins to build it that way. And so it just takes time. You just don't do it overnight. You just don't do it overnight. Another question.
Brother Gorman, I'm interested in your Bible classes that meet in the homes during the week, and I felt a calling to this as well for our body. But I find my biggest problem, and this is a double-faceted question, I find my biggest problem in the ones that would be wanting to get into this and lead this are the people that I have the least faith in and trust in, and are the ones that cause me problems. And secondly, what do you do about these kind of people that start these things on their own? What can you do about it? It's something like you've described about how they get together and it's like, you know, who saw the greatest vision, that kind of thing, the charismatic element. And what I'm asking is, how do you get qualified people, and how do you deal with those that aren't qualified that want to go ahead?
Okay. A person, here again, brethren, you got to train. Now, and with the people that's going to start them on their own, you're going to always have that. But what you do, you push from the platform. You can go look out here and you'll see, I guess you still have the bulletin board, the pictures of all the altar workers and everyone. I mean, all the Bible study leaders and what have you in the area they're in out here. And Gladys Terry is the person you want to buttonhole after I leave here in a few minutes to talk to about this program. Any of the rest of you, y'all can get with her and discuss it with her. But you cannot teach till, number one, you've been trained. And see, what's happening with you now, just to picking up off your question, is you want to start it, you feel a burden to start it, you have no one trained, and the people who want to do it are the people that you feel aren't qualified to do it. Okay? So now then, you're playing catch-up ball, because the theme and the need for the Bible studies are out there, so the inexperienced are starting Bible studies that have no structure. So what you've got to do is get on a horse now and start a rigid training session of training people to start home Bible studies. The next thing is, you've got to get a rigid schedule of people that will stick with you, but also of what they're going to teach. That's important. They cannot be turned loose to teach whatever they want to teach. They have to all teach the same thing. And Gladys can go more into detail with you as to what we do with that aspect of it. Most of the time, they teach something I've already taught. Okay, but it has to be all teaching the same thing. But you can catch up with it if you'll get on this horse and get with it to training the workers. Take your Sunday school hour and quit using it through the traditional way that you've always used it. The Great Commission says, make disciples. Is that what the Great Commission says? That's my duty. Now, while we may have classes where they just teach general biblical scriptural teachings just to feed the people there, on Sunday morning, we have a class going on for
individuals that want to become Sunday school teachers. We have ushering classes going on. We have altar worker classes going on. We have people that want to get involved in home Bible studies. We have a class going on for that. We have a hospital ministry class going on. We have classes going on to teach those people how to minister. And we use the Sunday school hour to do it. And if we see we're getting behind, we'll beef it up. We'll have a session on Sunday morning, have another one Wednesday afternoon. Or Wednesday evening, I should say, to teach the people. So beef it up. Get your people trained. And start teaching sessions on Sunday morning. Get you some people to teach them that train your people to minister. Don't just let them go and have an adult quarterly. Does that make sense? I don't know how many classes we have going right now that's just teaching people how to minister on Sunday morning. Now, we have the other classes going on, but we're to make disciples. Get those people ready to get out there and do a job for God. And that'll help you beef it up. Brother, you had a question over here.
In all the lessons, the classes that you've given so far, Brother Gorman, you've made mention of hiring a secretary, having people working under you. Our church is experiencing great growth in North Mississippi, but I find that a lot of the traditional people that's been in our church are getting afraid of losing contact with me, the pastor. They say we don't need a church over 125, 150 because you lose your family element, you lose your closeness, you cannot get to the pastor. If we get an associate pastor or secretary and they start screening people, we won't be able to get to you. And this is what they're afraid. How do you handle this? And actually, I've always tried to be close to my people and let them know that I'm there. But how would you handle this? It's a fear that they have of losing a pastor.
That's right. And I fought that same thing, brother. I fought the same thing you're talking about. And I started preaching on the Great Commission. And then I would bring in thoughts like this. Don't start saying that you don't want the church to get any bigger. Because if you do, what if your uncle wants to get saved? Are we going to tell them that they can't come in because we got all we can take? And if you feel this way, then you better put in your order in heaven, because they tell me there's going to be a lot of people there. And you'll be uncomfortable there, because you can only associate with 120. Now, I made statements like that from the platform. When our church was going through the same thing this brother's fighting, I know exactly what he's fighting, and that's an element. They want a little family get-together while the world goes to hell. And that concept has to be changed, and it can only be changed through love and compassionate preaching. We have an obligation to reach the world. That's the only way we got in our church. We got the people to recognize we've got to be an integrated church. See? And whenever we started preaching and the hippies and the drug addicts started coming in, we got to reach all people of all races. And now then, we've bought the Teen Challenge Center. We've got an obligation to the people that are on drugs to help them. We've got to help these individuals. See, you've got to get it across that our job is not done till we have done everything we can to reach every person we possibly can. And you, as a pastor, is the only one that can change that philosophy. Yes, my brother.
Brother Gorman, we have personal latitude available for the council meeting to help our people who we point in these positions to understand which direction to go.
You have that personal literature also? Yes, we do have literature. And there will be some more literature on the altar workers deal that was asked about a little while ago. On Monday, Sister Terry will have some of the materials that's been prepared that we use in the crusades and all that will help you also on some of the outside meetings. But the booklet that we had last night, they'll be offering that again either later this afternoon or to Monday 1 that has all these materials in it, brother. So, yes, brother. It has most of it in it. There are new things developing all the time, brother, that some of that's not in it.
David Snodder from Washington, Missouri. Takes money to support these ministries.
Yes.
Is this a big pressure to you? And if so, how do you get around it? Suppose you miss a Sunday because of a snow flood. People don't send their money in or mail it in. How do you get around it?
It's tough. We were flooded out two Sundays here this past summer. One Sunday, we had about 6 inches of water in the building. And we could not have services. The other Sunday, a few people got in, but we lost two total Sundays. And it's tough regaining that. You just have to buckle down and really pray and challenge your people to come on through with the money. But one thing, if your church is not on a budget, you need to put it on a budget. And I don't know whether I'll have time on Monday to get into this or not, but if you'll remind me of it, I'll try to work some of it in. I won't have time. I just looked at my watch, and I won't have time to get into it in detail today. But when we put our church on a budget, I'll guarantee you, if you'll take the budget program that I will outline to you and work it like I tell you to work it, that if your income last year, say, for if your income for 1980 is $50,000, and you'll do what I tell you to do and plan all year 1981 to promote it, and then in 1982, you can't put it in 1981 because you don't have the time. But if you work it, you could put it in by 1982. You'll increase your income by 30 to 40%. I'll guarantee it. If you do what I tell you to do. The only thing I didn't tell you was that I get 15% of the increase for giving you the outline. No, sir. I studied this thing, and I studied it, and I studied it, and I studied it. And one of the greatest things you can do is build a stewardship program and preach on stewardship and challenge your people and have a commitment day. Our budget for this coming year, well, our budget for last year, for the church only. Now, this is not the school, the daycare center, the Who Cares Ministries. This is strictly the church. Was $1,800,000. Just the church. That was committed in 1 week. And when you get those commitments, the people will come through with the money most of the time. God will bless them, and they'll give it. And we've started, and for the last 8 years, our budget has been pledged in 1 week's time. Whatever the budget is, it'll be pledged in a week's time. And this has been true now for a number of years. So you must, if you don't have a systematic way to teach your people how to give and what have you, how do you ever expect them to accomplish it? And one of the things that really, really irks me, if we believe the whole Bible, then we believe that giving is very essential. See, I mean, that's strong. I mean, giving is very, very essential. That book is, Jesus Christ talked an awful lot about giving. And someone says, well, Brother Gorman, every time you come to church, you talk about giving. Well, why don't you get upset because I talk about people getting saved? Every time we come, we got sinners here. I should give an altar call, shouldn't I? Well, every time we come, we got somebody that still has not started paying tithe, and my work is not done till that person learns to be a good steward. See? It's not finished. And we must continuously present it. Just to show you, this happened about 2 weeks ago. I received a beautiful letter from a young couple, and they were thanking me. He said, Brother Gorman, we want to thank you that you never give up on teaching people to give. We've been coming to the church for 3 years, but we had never tithed. But back in March, you challenged us to tithe, and we started. And she began to name all the things that had happened to she and her husband. At the close of it, she says, Don't ever quit talking about giving, because look what we would have missed if you would have stopped simply because you was afraid you would hurt our feelings. And she and her husband both signed it. I get notes like that all the time, because you got to keep on in there.
Brother Gorman, my name is Glenn Jenkins. I'm pastor at Evangel Temple in Grand Prairie, Texas. I'd like for you to comment about your Christian school. Does your board operate the school? Does the school work under your church board? And how close do you work with the administrator or school principal? Or what is your relationship to the Christian school ministry?
Okay. We have one board. I would advise that. If you don't, you'll go get a war going between the two boards. You get a two-headed monster is what will happen to you if you're not careful. The one board is over every bit of the church's operation. And the school is under the church. Now, if you don't keep it that way, my experience from what I've learned from others, the school has a tendency to become worldly. And the first thing you know, the tail will be wagging the dog. The church begot the school, and not the school the church. And that's the way it's got to remain with us. No teacher can be hired until they're approved by me. The principal is given full reins to hire. He deals with the academic. I deal with the spiritual aspect. We have chapel services. He's given freedom to operate within the reins that we set up. He has a budget. He is given liberty to operate within that budget. If he goes over the budget for any reason, he must have approval from Carl Miller or myself before he goes over the budget. In any area, that has to be so. We try to keep a close tab with the school. We have a tremendous principal. He is a super, super guy. He's a gift from God to us. There he is back there. I didn't know you was here. Get out of here, man. I didn't know you was even... Here I am bragging on you. Jim Brent was with the public school system for about 18 years, wasn't it, Jim? 20 years? 20 years he was with the public school system, and still a young man, and he left there and came to us. He served as assistant principal, and he just does a super job. Our school... I have less contact with the school as far as dealing with problems now than ever. As a matter of fact, he pretty well takes care of the problems. I think maybe they have called on me twice this year about anything related to any kind of problem at the school. And I do try to speak occasionally in the chapels. Brother Foster, who is the assistant to Brother Lohenberg, he is in charge of chapel services. But we have a beautiful relationship between the church and the school, and we try to keep. Now, bear in mind that probably 40% of the kids that go to the school do not come to this church. Some of them go to Brother Savage's church. Some of them go to Brother Hall's church back here. Some of them go to other churches in the area. A lot of them come from all kinds of families. We win families to God through that school because of their kids coming here and God doing a work in their lives. I don't know how many families. I would say probably 30 to 40 families, entire families are in our church now as a result of the ministry of that school. See, the Borges family would be one of such nature. The Collins family would be another one. I could go down the list. I don't know how many families they are. The little boy that's a quarterback now. Yeah, Landry, he and his mother are in the church basically as a result of that school. And you could just go on at just any number of the families that have come in because of this. So the school is a tremendous ministry, and academically, our kids excel. Academically, they're right at the top whenever they go to these special deals where the various schools come together. The name slips me now. Yeah, competition of all kinds. Well, the kids, our kids come out right in the top and in every area. And so we have tremendous, tremendous academic program. As a matter of fact, one of the great joys, one of the first boys we graduated out of the school has already gone off to college and now is back here working on staff as an assistant coach and teaching in the school. And it's a real joy to have one of your own kids that you've brought up through the church go off, finish their education, and come back and be a part of the program. And he's one of the first that graduated. Another question? Okay. We have a bus service. If a person needs transportation to the church, they call and we furnish transportation for this person. We do not have a bus ministry. We do not have a visitation program. I think it's a bad thing. See, the least time that a man needs to be visited is the first week after he gets saved. It's because he's so high until he thinks that everything's beautiful anyway. And so what we usually do, we visit him three times. The first 3 weeks he's saved, that's the 3 weeks he don't need a visit. But after he's been saved for about 6 weeks, he comes down to earth. And by that time, we're taken up with somebody else. Now, I know it sounds good. When a person comes to the altar, our people take that individual, and you'll see them tomorrow. They'll be taken back in here. And they enroll those people into studies. They begin to encourage them. We try to get them into a Bible study in a home. We try to get them into Bible study at the church. We try to encourage them to get into a body and begin to worship. But, and I'm not telling you to do this, brethren. Please, please, I'm just sharing with you. When I'm asked questions, I'm not going to say exactly what you want to hear. I'm going to tell you what we're doing. I have problems with a visitation program. I just have all kinds of problems with it. See, I mean, I just cannot find it to be a scriptural thing. I have problems. Usually, many of the people that you've got out visiting, they're not qualified to do what needs to be done if they run into a problem. Now, that's always been my experience. Maybe yours is not that way. But our main thrust is the ministry of this church, of what's happened here. See, just like the lady I talked about a while ago that had in there. We can just go down the list. I'll call it. Bill Terry is seated right here. His wife is a full-time staff member here at our church. Bill Terry came to my office on a Saturday morning. Life messed up. Torn to pieces. A businessman. He was as confused as they come. I prayed with him, talked with him, and he was hard as nails. And then he got the feeling, he saw that I was so sincere, then he started feeling sorry for me. Because he was afraid that I was going to be so determined to get him saved and that he wouldn't get saved that it was going to hurt me. And so then I finally come to the deal. He was a gambler. And I came to the point that I said to him, I said, okay, Bill, make a deal with me. Come to church three times a week for 4 weeks. If it don't work, I won't ever ask you to come to church again. And he said, okay. He came to church on Sunday morning. That was on Saturday morning. His gambling buddy, who had been saved, brought him to my office. He came to church. That Sunday morning, when I invited people to come forward for salvation, Bill Terry came and stood about right here. I came along the line praying with people, and when I got to Bill, I reached up to lay my hands on him, and when I reached, he wasn't there. He was slain in the Spirit, and God started a work in Bill Terry's life from that day. Now, Bill Terry is a very successful businessman. He has been influential in bringing numbers of people and causing numbers of people to come to this church because they've seen what God did in his life. Dominic Pecoraro never did anything but gamble. Dominic Pecoraro, when he got saved and filled with the Spirit, Dominic has been responsible. He's a man who brought him to my office. I think I counted up one day, there are 60 men and families in this church as a result of Dominic Pecoraro because of what they have seen in Dominic's life. Because Dominic, I guess he gambled every day of his life. You know, if he didn't, he just couldn't find anybody to gamble with him. And God changed his life. Well, I mean, it's this type of thing. The man that you saw in here in the short guy was very stocky made, muscular-like, that was around in the cafeteria there. That's Sid Stone. Sid Stone, his son that came around with a tray serving the bread pudding and all and helping with the tea and all, this boy was the leader of one of the biggest motorcycle gangs in the city. God saved him and delivered him. As a result, Sid Stone got saved. His wife, his daughter got saved. And from that, then other gang members got saved. And that's been the thing. The ministry that happens here, that's why that I believe in working here. When you see me leave this auditorium tomorrow, I'll go down that aisleway there, out to there, and up to my office. You won't see me shaking hands with people back there. I'm going to stay here as long as I've got the strength to pray with people. Here's where it happens. If you send them away from here happy, they'll bring you customers. And that's the secret of the growth of this church. And I think, am I right, Gladys? Am I right, Ed Brown? Ed, you've been here. Bill, all of these people. That's the secret, is what happened between that front seat and that pulpit. That's what makes this church grow. And you got to keep it happening here, brethren. That's the key. Another question. Yes.
Made a comment on the priority of staff members. Start with the full-time secretary. Then you talked about business area. Now, you take a church maybe running 140, 150 people, limited budget. How would you go about, would it be a volunteer man in the church that would help with the business? Would you seek to put him on staff? But you had labeled this as a priority after full-time secretary.
Yes. I would try to find a man, if I could, that had some experience in the area of business that could work that and help out with certain phases of the business. That may be a retired person. I've got a man that's fixing to retire, and he doesn't know that I know it, but I've already got him pegged. And I went by him the other day, and I just said to him, and he looked at me and he says, "What do you know?" But he's a beautiful person. He's been in an executive level operation for many years with a telephone company. He's going to be retiring next spring. And I plan to get this man to work with us in certain areas. Because if I don't put in work, his wife is. And I'd rather work for God than for her. So I'm going to grab him and get him busy. And you'll find a person like this. And another thing you can do, there are a lot of men today that have been saved in their senior years. And what I mean by that is they may have accepted Christ when they were 60 years of age. And they may be leaving a business, but they'd like to give the rest of their life working for God. Get in touch with a placement service in Springfield. There's a lot of those people, and they'll move. And it would be no cost to you, maybe cost you $300 or $400 a month for their salary, because they're on a pension plus their own Social Security. They can only take so much more, you know, and they will be happy to work with you because they feel, man, I was left out. I've wasted my whole lifetime. See? And this is what I plan to do. I've got people earmarked for things that I'm hoping in the future to be able to do for God as these people come along and they retire. And I know he is because he told me he was. But I think he's afraid that I'm going to work him harder than he'd work himself. But Bill is, and I mean, tremendous knowledge and wealth of material that these men can give to an organization. You've got them in your community. You've got probably some in your church. See? And give them areas of responsibility of helping with the business. Just like when we bought this lot over here. Carl Miller must have spent no less than 60 hours. See, there's five people that's involved in that lot over there. Five people. Plus one of them was separated and divorced, and his wife was suing him. And he was mad at her. Now, these were his words to me. He says, look, you can pay me her part 10 years from now. And he wrote it up that way. He was an attorney. He wrote it up. He said, I want to prolong her getting it as long as I can. He really loved her. But Carl Miller spent between 40 and 60 hours getting all of that worked out. You know how much time I spent with it? 30 minutes. The attorney for both sides, Carl Miller, and the representative that was selling the that working for the group they're selling, came in my office. They read the contract to me. My attorney explained it to me. I asked a few questions. I signed it. That was it. Okay? If we'd have bought that and I'd had to do all that, preaching would have suffered. I'd have come boiling in here for a Wednesday night service, and I'd grab something, and we'd have a 15-minute little lecture, and the next thing you know, my service will on Wednesday night be like a lot of other churches I know. You wouldn't have anybody to preach to, and you'd say, well, my people just don't come on Wednesday night. I don't blame them. I wouldn't either if I wasn't getting any more than what some people give them. You see what I'm saying to you? Business is where the average preacher spends too much time, because first of all, you're not called as a businessman. See? And you have to spend too much time learning it. You make too many mistakes when there are people like this. See, just like when I start to do something, I have enough people now. And I go, I've been working on something, and I've been meeting with Bill Terry for breakfast on Sunday morning, talking to him about this thing now for the last three Sunday mornings. To talk to him, get information. Why should I go try to study this out? That's where he makes his living. He deals with that every day, and that's what I'm going to run around here and try to find out. He already knows. Draw from these people, men, so you don't waste God's time and wear out God's man. Amen? That help you, bro? Good. Right to Springfield. I've got some. That's how I got Carl Miller. Praise God. That's very good. And there'll be others that will find similar situations. I can take one more question. No, they don't have to be. That's what I say. You can latch on to a person that be a part-time person. I need a full-time person here that work as an administrative assistant and all. But with a smaller church, you would not need. And you just get someone who can help you with certain things. Banking and things of this nature, working with the banks and all these things. These men, they do this every day. They know how to talk that banker's language, you know. Now, I'm going to tell you where the most of us have problems. And that is the fact, well, we don't want to admit that we don't know. See? And that's bad. See, I don't try. I have doctors. I have lawyers. I have professors. I have businessmen. Have common laborers come to this church. I don't claim to know as much about law as a lawyer. I don't claim to know as much about business as Bill Terry does. But don't let him get in my ballpark, because I'll make him look like Ned in the first reader if he gets in the book. See? I mean, that's his ball game. So I mean, he's what he is in his area, but I am the pastor of the church. And if we could just recognize that, and we be the pastor. See, we are the pastor of the church, and we feed the flock. And we let these other men help us in these help. Ministries of helps is what it is, brethren. That's what it is. It's a God-given thing. It's ministries of help. And the longer Jesus delays, the more you're going to need this. Because every day the IRS and government regulations are getting stronger and stronger. And if you don't have the thing set up right, you could get yourself into serious trouble. Amen. God bless you. You may stand to your feet. Gary Lou, hand me my Bible there, brother, would you? I'm going to the state penitentiary, not to stay. If I'm not back here in the morning, y'all don't dismiss church till I get back. Get on your knees. No, we're going there to speak to the prisoners in a banquet, and we're looking forward to it. We're taking the prisoners a brand new study Bible that we'll be giving to them tonight. I'll miss being with you and fellowshipping with you, but I'll see you in the morning, 8 o'clock.
You can sit down and be seated for just a moment. We're going to bring the ladies back in. I have something I need to share with you, and then we're going to dismiss you and let you go your way.